Spectacular, episode 455, Gods of the Damned, recorded live on December 11th, 2014. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Biowolf.
And I'm your third host, Godzilla T.
And we are here this week to talk about Nightfall, which the finale episode just aired yesterday, as is this recording. And there have been some mixed opinions of Nightfall so far, I think mine included. Most of all, it's gotten a pretty decent reception, I think, as far as kind of having the purpose of it being Locke's introduction story. It kind of does an alright job. I think there's a lot more that could have been fleshed out, but that's what we're here to talk about tonight. We were going to try to have some special guests on to possibly talk about it, but we didn't quite get things pulled together last minute, so we're just going to kind of flesh it out between ourselves here and kind of go through some of the stuff that we liked, some of the stuff we didn't like. I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've probably watched all of Nightfall. If you haven't, then I suggest going back and doing so, because we're going to be talking about lots and lots of spoilers on this if you have not watched it. So if you haven't watched it, stop the podcast now, go watch it, and come back and listen to this later. Starting off with some of the characters, I think 343 actually did a pretty good job of having a good range of characters and trying to get lots of different character styles in here, and I actually think they nailed the attitude of Oni pretty well. What do you guys think? There was a team of four from Oni, and it seemed, I mean, you expect Oni, they're kind of like, they think they're above everyone else, they're more important, they hold more responsibility, and they're the ones that actually gets things done. And I think not necessarily Locke's character, but I think the other Oni characters kind of portrayed that very well throughout the series. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when I was watching it, when I played other things and you hear about different things about Oni and like how everybody doesn't really care for him, they really did make a picture of that in this really, really well. Like you said before, not too much Locke, but like the other characters, it just really... I didn't like him at the very end. Like, I really didn't. I was really happy when what they got done to him. I mean, apart from the one guy.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, apart from the one guy.
That's kind of dark.
Well, I mean, you have to give in consideration of this. I mean, you have these two guys. He basically throws the one guy off the cliff, you know. You know, he did all these really horrible things, so he basically got what he deserved at the end. I mean, that's just kind of how it went. But the one guy that seemed to be all right was the one that I can't remember his name for anything, but the one that fell down the cliff into the valley. I don't remember Estrin? His name at all. Yeah, I think so. Like at least he was, you know, up for doing actually what was supposed to happen, but the other guy is like, nope, you're gonna die because me and this other guy are gonna live. So they definitely did a pretty good job portraying Oni. Like, they really did. They did a really good job of that.
I agree with that.
I think a lot of the stuff that went on during Nightfall got better as it went on, but it had a really rough start.
Yeah.
That opening sequence just... I mean, you have to have some kind of establishing opening sequence, and the whole Elite with the bomb was an interesting way to do it. It's almost like the story that they introduced it in is a secondary story to what Nightfall is really supposed to be about, which is supposed to be Locke's origin story and kind of how he does things and portrays things. Taking a look at how that first episode was kind of done, it seemed like a lot of stuff was fake in a way.
Yeah. And the one thing that really kind of shunned me off about like the first episode was when just the way he was holding the pistol.
I mean, that was one of those things too.
I mean, the way he was holding his pistol, the way he was shooting the shield off the Elite and, like, jumping on his back and doing things like that. I mean, granted, I know he's not, a Spartan by any means, but, like...
He's an ONI operative. He knows how to shoot a gun and hold a gun and all that stuff. And it didn't really resemble any of what you would normally see from a person that's been trained in the military. Like, you hold your arms out, your arms aren't bent. You're not holding this your pistol sideways, rodeoing a Elite trying to shoot off his shields. I mean, one thing you're supposed to be worried about, ricochet and all that. And it just seemed the Elite was too slow for a Zealot Elite. The animation was very slow, seemed very sluggish, and you would expect an Elite to be a lot more ferocious than the one that was portrayed here.
Yeah, and like when they were in the part where they're in that tube or that underground thing where you first seen the Elite and they're going into that battle with the sword, it's like something should have happened a little bit more in that than just the Elite running off like that. I don't think that's what an Elite would do. I think he would try to find where you were, not just go off. And I mean, granted, he had that, he was trying to get the whatever he was doing done with the bomb, but it just, I don't know. There's a couple things in the beginning of it I did not care about. And
so I didn't have an issue with the Elite leaving locked down there in order to kind of complete his objective. The big issue for me was just how sluggish the Elite was, how anticlimactic the fight between Locke and the Elite was.
I mean, you know, even though the, you know, Locke is a trained ONI operative, you know, for one person to take down an Elite, it just doesn't seem plausible in the universe. You know, not without at least some type of explosive device to peel the shields off of an Elite. And, you know, hold him at gunpoint and demand that, you know, he hands over the bomb. It just doesn't fit.
Right. If you look at the overall story, that's kind of something nitpicky to pick on. But again, this was the whole setup to it. And I know when I was at Halo Fest talking with a few people there, they weren't really thrilled on how the season started either, or how the series started. A lot of the stuff from how the characters portrayed themselves, how some of the stunts were done regarding Locke and the Elite, and just kind of how the story portrayed for the first chapter, it didn't seem like it was well produced, well thought out.
Almost like it was a last minute thought on the setup, you know, just to get the story moving.
Yeah, it's like, we have this great story for how to introduce Locke as a character. How do we get this off the ground? It was something that I think fell flat, really flat for that first episode. It did not seem very believable. Now, granted, the way that the rest of the story kind of developed throughout the rest of Nightfall did turn out to be pretty good. There was a lot of moments in there where you got to learn a lot about Locke, got to learn a lot about how ONI operates if you weren't really exposed to that. Like, if you haven't read the books, you haven't really looked into any of the additional fiction there, then you can get a pretty good idea of how ONI is thought about through Nightfall, what kind of reputation that they hold amongst the other colonies, amongst the UNSC and all that, all the human side of the Halo universe. Now, taking a look at how Locke's character is developed, you really don't see a lot of it start until the third chapter. I think you see bits and pieces of it in chapter two. You really start seeing Locke as the ONI person that he is portrayed to be, but then you see him really mature over the course of Nightfall. And while I like how they showed that, it seemed a little too quick for someone that's ONI trained, unless this is like Locke is just a complete exception to how ONI typically operates.
Right.
Well, they don't really go into his past history at all. So, I mean, we learn about his personality, but we don't really learn a lot about his backstory as far as, you know, what he's done previous to the Oni stuff. So, you know, we don't know, we don't have any context to know what shaped him into the person he is.
Right. That could have been something that they've addressed, or they could have addressed in the second stories, but the second stories were something that was kind of interesting. It added a bit of extra context to the storyline that was going on during Nightfall, all taken from the perspective of Oni, of course, but it didn't really feel like it added that much substance to Nightfall.
Yeah.
It just kind of goes to show some of the additional events that happened and how really, what's the word I'm looking for? How secretive Oni is, how kind of in the dark they like to be, how in control they like to be over everything and know everything, every little facet of all their ops going on. So it just kind of gives you a bigger sense of how Oni is just this kind of completely overshadowing organization that wants to be in control of everything. And I don't know how many people kind of picked up on some of the things that were going on throughout some of the second story things, but we've seen in the past Oni do dealings with the elites before. There was some stuff in the books, if you've read some of those, and there's just like some shady business going on in some of those second stories. I have to go back and watch them again. I've only watched through Nightfall once completely and all the second stories once, but it definitely seems like there's some shady stuff going on with Oni. I don't know if that's going to play a part in Halo 5, but I definitely expect it to. I definitely expect some of these second stories to be expounded upon when we get closer to Halo 5 and the story that's going to be portrayed between Locke and Master Chief.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's really going to make me, it makes me wonder is if we're seeing Locke kind of maturing through this entire thing throughout Nightfall. In the very beginning, you can kind of see him as like what you expect an OD operative or agent would be. And then at the very end, you kind of see him do, you know, better stuff at the end. It just makes me wonder how he's going to be in Halo 5. Like, is he going to, like, after these events, he's going to completely change? You know, what's driving him to do these different things now, and why is he looking as why he's looking for Chief in a way?
That's a story that I don't think we're going to really get much detail on until, like, unless there's a novel that comes out between Broken Circle and Halo 5, which it sounds like there's supposed to be a few lined up that kind of goes into detail there. Well, I don't know if it's going to go into detail, but if there are some lined up that will go into detail, or we might just have to wait until Halo 5 comes out. This was, of course, just specifically focused on introducing Locke as a character and how he's going to be portrayed within the universe when Halo 5 comes around. We don't really get any sense of what Locke's purpose is going after the Master Chief. We just have that from the two little snippets before and after the Halo 2 anniversary segment, which, honestly, I haven't even gotten to the one after Halo 2 Anniversary because I'm still waiting to play co-op with you guys.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely piqued my interest, though. After seeing the one before Halo and the one after, it really makes me, like, and after watching Nightfall, it really makes me wonder, like, I know we're probably not going to get anything from until Halo 5, but they definitely have my interest at, like, a lot right now, just wondering what's next, you know, what's his motives after this whole Nightfall deal.
Well, we do still have the other Halo TV series coming out too.
True. That's true.
We don't know where that's going to take place though.
Yeah. Well, we don't know that it's going to deal directly with Locke or with the Master Chief, but it may deal with the, you know, Oni and the possible causes that Master Chief may have gone rogue. To the point where Locke would be looking for him, you know, kind of a lead into it.
It just makes me wonder though why Oni has to step in. You know what I mean? Like what is it that the UNSC's done to make Chief? If that is the case, why Chief would go rogue? You know what I mean? Like it just Halo 5 is going to be a very interesting story as of right now. After what we've seen and everything that we've seen with Halo 4, Nightfall, you know, the introducing of Locke, it's going to be interesting to see when we finally are able to play it.
Yeah.
The one thing you have to remember is that all Spartans are a part of the Oni operation. I mean, they are basically Oni operatives. They're just used in the UNSC as soldiers, but they're basically considered UNSC property. So that could play a lot into why Oni would send a Spartan after a Spartan.
Right. And me and my friend were talking about this a couple days ago, is that the very beginning of Halo 4, we have that whole cinematic where Halsey is getting interrogated by the Oni person or whoever it was. And he was asking about Chief and stuff. And it's like, it makes you wonder if that was Locke, maybe. Like, that was a really good, like, because everybody's been asking questions, you know, who was that person? What was that even for? You know, how does that even have anything to do with Halo 4? It's maybe leading up to what Halo 5 is going to be. And it's definitely plausible. I mean, like, what happens if that was Locke trying to figure out where Chief was, or maybe try to get a story of how to find him or all that?
I don't really think so, because at that point, it kind of all depends on where that conversation is actually set in the universe. Right. Is it set before or after Halo 4?
I think it's probably just like immediately before, very close to the events of Halo 4, I'm pretty sure.
Right. Because, you know, right after, you know, if you read the books, shortly thereafter Halo 4, Dr. Halsey learns that Chief is still alive.
Yeah. So
I would say, you know, it happens right before Halo 4. Well, at that point in time, you know, yes, Chief is lost, but he's not necessarily gone rogue. They're still trying to find him, but, you know, they've pretty much presumed him dead.
Right, at that particular moment. Yeah, I mean, it's just, what was it, in Spartan Ops season, not season, episode 6, I believe, is when Halsey knows that Chief's alive from, what's his name?
Lasky.
No, not Lasky. The hologram, the
Roland.
AI.
Roland.
She kind of did that whole...
Yeah, when she broke out of her prison cell.
Yeah, and she finds out. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, like, where that conversation took place.
Like I said, at the point, you know, with the way her statements are posed, she doesn't know that Chief's still alive. So I would say that particular scene is before Halo 4, you know, before all.
Oh, it's definitely before.
Yeah, before, you know, all this Agent Locke stuff.
Right. But you said something earlier that I'm not sure exactly is true. You said that Locke was a Spartan. I don't think it's ever mentioned that he is a Spartan. He just might be using Spartan-like armor. He's always been referred to Agent Locke.
Yes, but to be able to operate the armor, you have to have the Spartan enhancements.
That was just for the Spartan 2s.
And the Spartan 3s.
Well, yeah, but they've made lots of improvements to armor. And, I mean, not saying that he couldn't undergo the augmentation, because they worked on it, I think, for the Spartan 4s to where it was a little bit easier to do it with adults. But I wouldn't necessarily say he's a Spartan quite yet until we get the full details on that he did undergo the Spartan treatment.
Right. I mean, I guess that's a really good point, though. I mean, I guess them showing the armor that he's in, I guess that kind of makes a mindset that he is. But it makes me wonder if, after watching Nightfall, it really makes me wonder how he does be, if it is the case that he is one, how he did become one. You know, there's a lot of stuff that Oni, like projects and stuff like that. I mean, that was a conversation we had before we even knew Master Chief Collection was even out, was when we first seen that first photo and we seen the Spartan ego. And we seen the little Oni patch on the side, on his left chest plate or whatever. It makes you wonder, it's like, if it's Oni trying to do something, you know, is it the fact of Oni's trying to make more enhanced soldiers and try getting rid of the rest? That's the reason why he's going after Chief. Like, there's a lot of different things that people are wondering as of right now. You know, what's the reasoning of him? Like, that's the biggest question out of anything I've ever talked with anybody with, is what's the reasoning for him to go after Master Chief? Like, that, what's his motives?
I think there's a lot that we're going to have to find out through either a book that's going to be coming out afterwards, or just something that we'll have to wait till Halo 5. There's some reason that Oni's going after him, and I think it's safe to assume at this point, where we know Master Chief is on his own agenda, not necessarily fighting for the UNSC specifically, but not exactly fighting against it. He's more on the road to humanity, and it seems like he's almost not directly kind of going along with what Halsey's doing, which is trying to figure out where humanity's place is within the galaxy, what's been left behind by the Forerunners for humanity. I mean, he had the contact with the Librarian. There's still the whole mystery of what exactly happened to Cortana and where she could be, and if she could come back, all that stuff. And we have the big cliffhanger after Spartan Ops Season 1 that still needs to be addressed. But I have a pretty good feeling that Chief is probably on the journey trying to figure out what's out there left behind for the Forerunners, to kind of discover what humanity's true purpose, what humanity's legacy is within the Halo universe. So I think that's kind of where the direction it's going, and that's the whole Master Chief going rogue thing, I think, is being referred to. But that's just my opinion of it.
No, that's sounds really plausible. The one thing going back to the Spartan thing, the one thing I forgot is that, you know, one of the theories out there is it's a Forerunner human hybrid armor. So it's entirely possible.
Well, that's what Infinity is. It's a Forerunner human hybrid ship. So why couldn't they do that with the combat skin for Forerunners and the Spartan armor?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. I said the Infinity, but that was the engines, wasn't it? That was Forerunner.
No, yep. More than just the engines, but yeah.
Primarily the engines. Yeah. And the Infinity was Halsey's design too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see where she goes too, especially with all the kind of information that the Librarian left her with the key, if I remember saying that right, the key.
Or half the key.
Half of the Janus.
The half of the key. I'm sure she's going to dissect that in every way possible.
It's interesting to think about how they're going to address Halo 5, because there's lots of loose ends that we have from Halo 4, and now we have Nightfall, and who knows what other story that could be portrayed in the TV show that could also be playing a part to Halo 5, and we have Spartan Strike, we have more books coming out. There's all these kinds of threads that can be pulled into, or that are going to be fed into Halo 5 somehow, and it's going to be interesting to see how they manage to stuff that much content and tie all those pieces into a new campaign story. Because that's a lot of stuff to keep track of. That's a lot of stuff to figure out how this is going to fit in with the bigger game, making sure that people are well-informed in the background who maybe haven't watched Nightfall or haven't read the books or haven't exactly caught up with any of the other fiction that's going to be playing into the Halo 5 campaign. I think it's safe to assume that whatever they do that ties in from Halo 4, people are going to understand where that is from. But you have kind of two endpoints to that. You have, what is Chief doing? We kind of have that teaser of Chief going out on his own, going rogue in a sense. What exactly happened to Cortana? What's happening with the UNSC now? What's happening with Halsey and the two parts of the Janus Key? Are they actually going to go find the Forerunner technology and whatnot? There's just a whole bunch of threads that is leading into Halo 5 that is going to be, it seems like, a nightmare to manage and to make sure everything gets tied in correctly.
Yeah, I mean, another question that really has me wondering, and I don't remember them ever addressing it exactly, but the him in the sand and his little cloak looking at that Forerunner, I don't, there's a lot of things people saying what that thing is, but the owl looking Forerunner,
right,
that rose up out of the ground, and him holding out Cortana's AI chip, like, they said that that was just a trailer for the journey. Like, but just why would they represent something of Chief looking to find a way to bring back Cortana? That's what everybody's mindset is as of right now, what Chief is going rogue for or looking for to get Cortana back. Like, that's what everybody's thinking the Halo 5 is going to be about.
Right. And we still have no idea what the Librarian did to Cortana, if anything.
Yeah.
While Chief was
or
in there, too.
Chief.
Well, we kind of have an idea of what he did to what she did to Chief.
Well, we know one thing she did to Chief, but we don't know what else she did while she was activating that particular gene code.
Gene song?
Gene song, sorry. It's just there can be some other things because, you know, the Librarian in the books, she imprinted a Geish on the human population, which is basically human memories. So there could be something else that she's activated in Chief through that particular portion where he's on the search for something. You know, he has a picture of a place in his head and he's trying to find it.
That's very true. There's lots of possibilities. And it's just going to be interesting to see how 343 accounts for all that. It's a lot of stuff to keep track of. Anyways, back to some Nightfall stuff. What they went through in the first part after the whole bomb and the whole element only affecting humans thing, that's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, some element, an actual element that directly affects human DNA seems very, very peculiar.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't really explain how it affected humans, like why it selected certain humans. Like, it was never really addressed too well. We just knew that it was an element from this piece of Halo ring that people were mining. But the thing is, though, they may have mentioned it or said why they were farming for it, but I don't understand why. Like, what was the whole purpose of that?
So there were quite a few parts of it that was in the second story from why the two humans were there doing mining jobs. And that was because it was
their world was faced in the middle of a 100-year drought. They had basically no crop, no income, and they would do just about anything to make money could support their family. And they were getting paid well to go mine this on this piece of Halo ring. So, you know, they went where the money was.
Right.
And to think that it was all caused by the explosion generated by the Pillar of Autumn on the Halo. I mean, it's just way too much of a coincidence to be anywhere scientifically accurate. Now, I know like high pressures of nuclear fusion and fission and all that stuff could do some really wonky things. But again, an element that specifically targets human DNA makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're also talking about using
compound, sure.
base minerals that we know nothing about. You know, these are forerunner alloys that were on this Halo ring that we don't know anything about as far as their composition at the time of Halo CE.
It still seems a bit far-fetched.
Yeah. There's been some interesting combinations of chemicals in the past.
Yeah, but nothing that specifically targets human DNA.
Well, actually, if you look at it that way, the element itself doesn't target human DNA because humans were mining it. It's probably something that can be modified to target human DNA.
With that bomb that the Elite dropped at the beginning.
You know, after a refining process.
But the thing that doesn't make any sense to me is it's like, why certain human DNA? Why not all of it? Like, it just doesn't, to me, it doesn't make sense to why target only select few people while there's others that could still go. I mean,
what was the reason?
Well, you have genetic diseases all the time that target specific genes, and that's not uncommon.
Well, right, but what was the reasoning? Like, why go after humans at all? Like, if that was the case, why didn't they have the element or compound, whatever, go after all human? Why just certain? Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think the attack on Cedra was more like a test run.
To see how effective it was.
Okay. Exactly.
Right. And I think, to kind of go back to your argument earlier, Godzilla, I think there are certain things where it has, like, certain elements have to be kind of combined or activated with something else, but even then, the whole idea that an element is causing it just seems kind of weird. Or I would say for the humans mining it, it's probably the elements are probably combined with the stuff that the humans are mining. That's why it doesn't affect them instantly. And it's something with that pulse where it could probably, like, it's purified and then kind of through that pulse injected basically into mm-hmm. a body.
Well, there is a reason they call it sci-fi.
Yeah, but there's like a certain level where you only accept so much sci-fi, and you get to the point where it's like, okay, is this really like feasibly possible, even given the sci-fi stature of it?
No. Wait a minute here. How many people are fans of Star Trek?
Gosh, that show is... I'm fans of Star Trek, but there are certain things in there it's like... Yeah, I know that can't really happen.
You know, it's just, you know, when you're watching sci-fi, you've just got to take some of that in, you know, into the realm of creative license.
True.
I understand what you're saying.
For Star Trek, though, there are certain things that are, you base it off of science fantasy for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I guess for the most part, people kind of accept some of that. I think there's a lots of parts in Star Trek that are very believable, but there are definitely parts of it that is definitely science fantasy, like Q. Mm-hmm. That's definitely science fantasy. But for Halo, I guess this is just my personal taste of Halo and what I come to expect, but I expect Halo to be like reasonably believable when it comes to sci-fi type of stuff. And I just can't wrap my head around an element. I can expect a compound, but not an element to specifically target DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me it just doesn't. It doesn't add up, and it really just did not make sense. Like,
that whole first episode was just really, really rough. The rest of Nightfall was actually pretty decent. The character development was pretty cool. The Lococo was an interesting introduction there. Although I would have liked to have seen, through the second stories at least, an explanation of why the Lococo in here were different than the normal Lococo worms that you see in Hunters. Because they did say in Chapter 3 that these worms were different than normal Lococo worms because they could sense the UNSC technology and like the difference in your EM that you're putting off and all that stuff. So that's one of those things that I would have liked to have seen more information about as well.
Yeah. I mean, they were acting like throughout that entire, like it was really cool that they showed what that was like, when the heat, like when you first seen that initial, like the first teaser trailer, when you seen the human kind of deconstructed to like what the worms were attacking decompose. The other people decompose or whatever you want to call it. Everybody in their mind thought everybody was talking about that was some sort of flood.
Yeah, I don't know why they said that because I called Lococo.
Yeah, I mean it was really cool. I wanted to say it was flood. I really did. Like I was hoping that it was that way. It would bring some sort of way back into them to go back into Halo 5 or some like I just wanted to be flood, but the worms were so sporadic. Like they were really like they attacked everything they seen, it seemed.
Well, in the canon for the Legolo, even in their home system where they were originally found by the Covenant, Legolo had particular tastes, and I know this is kind of a stretch. You know, some of them would eat the Forerunner relics, and some of them would eat around the Forerunner relics. So, you know, they've already got some diversity in them, it could be that the EM fields from electronic devices agitate this particular this particular colony of worms.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, there's already a little bit of diversity built into the species to begin with. The colonies that are selected to become hunters are, they're picked very carefully. Let's put it that way.
Right. But another question that really had my interest too was why were they there? Like, what was the reasoning for them to be there, like, on that range? I mean, like, I was thinking it's like them being that close to the sun and constantly rotating and frying every time it faced that other side, I thought it would have gotten rid of everything, like completely decimated everything.
They could have gone into caves or underground or something like that. It's not something that they had to be.
I mean, it's not uncommon. I mean, look at all the sea life around what they call the vents, the volcanic vents under the ocean.
Vents or whatever, with all those worms.
Yeah, there's lots of things that can survive in extreme heat. And towards the end, you saw that as the sun was coming up, they were headed for underground. So
right.
Well, they were headed for the bomb.
Yeah, they're.
That's where they were headed. They were headed for the bomb.
Okay.
Or that's well, what I interpreted.
It looked like they were going underground. They looked like they were going underground to me.
Huh. Well, it seemed like they were rushing in the direction
of the bomb when that he activated it.
Right, because that was like a massive power source.
Yeah.
That's just what I took from it. Whenever Spartan Aiken activated the bomb, in that moment, that's when all the Lococo worms were like, oh, this new powerful thing. Yep.
Yeah, and drew him away from the...
That just, to me, that doesn't make sense because the timer on that bomb is not going to be putting out more power or a bigger EM field than that ship was.
When you have a bomb that's primed like that,
it doesn't put out an EM field until it explodes.
Mm.
It doesn't take that much electricity to detonate a nuclear bomb.
No, but there's still, I don't know. I could see it being something where it's like they sense something that's very distinct like that.
Yeah, but just at that same moment, the sun is starting to crack the horizon too. So
like that was so cool.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But
you could look at it either way.
Yeah, I mean, just I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but like when you were talking about the worms going after something like electronic or EMF or whatever you want to call it, wouldn't they have gone after, I was thinking about it, like wouldn't they have gone after the guns too?
And they turned them off.
Oh, they did turn them off.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, like, I don't remember seeing that. Like I said, I've only ran through it once, so I didn't pick up on a lot of details. But I was going through, I was like, they're carrying these guns. That has some sort of electricity going through it, doesn't it? Or whatever the worms are after.
Which is another point I find very interesting, that you have to turn a gun on to shoot it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, the other thing is it's when everything was green, like when the lights turn on the side and stuff, I was looking at that. Is the little monitor that shows you the ammo count was still on after the fact they turned it off. So, like, that's probably me just going way into it and wondering too much. But, like,
I don't remember seeing the counter on.
It was like in the middle, like where you seen what's his name pick up the gun from when they were trying to go for the oxygen. They held the other guy hostage is where you seen the counter on the display.
I guess I just missed it because the only time I saw the counter on the AR was right at the ship.
Yeah, me too.
When he shot the pilot.
Right.
And you physically saw him turn the gun on to shoot the pilot.
That is weird that you have to turn on a gun.
If it was an energy-based weapon, like a railgun or something like that, I could see it. But we're talking about bullets.
Yeah.
They don't need electricity to fire.
Right.
Yeah. It's true. No, it is true. I understand that.
Now, I mean, he could be, if it was a DMR, I could kind of see it. He's turning on a targeting system.
Right.
But an AR, it's an AR. He doesn't have his helmet, so he doesn't have his HUD. It's just one of those little things that bugged me.
I didn't exactly understand it either. I thought that was something that was very peculiar, and I'm going to have to ask Frankie or Kiki about that one of why it was told in such a way where these guns had to be turned on. I don't know if there's anything in the Halo lore that says that weapons like that have to be turned on. I can understand from a scope and having the display on there, but like for the pistol?
Yeah, there shouldn't be any sort of electricity or anything to turn a gun on just so you can sit there and fire a hammer. You just pull it back and it just shoots.
Well, I could see it with a targeting system if he was still wearing his armor, because, you know, then it could bring up a targeting reticle in his HUD. But standing there with no armor on and still having to turn the gun on to fire, that's the part that bugs me.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a few unexplained instances throughout Nightfall, or stuff that just doesn't even really make sense at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of unanswered stuff in there. But the one cool thing that when I was watching it, the fact that they were in like this deserted rock with nothing but like charred ash and stuff, it was really cool that when they went down, they seen the water and some sort of plant life down there. That was pretty cool too.
I'm kind of like, okay, the temperatures are talking about, there would not be any liquid water on the surface.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was just really, like, I just didn't understand how there was any sort of vegetation or water or anything. I mean, they were down a little ways, but yeah, I don't
know. So foreigner technology can still generate that kind of stuff. I mean, it had to normally for the Halo Ring to operate. So it's
true.
Not completely surprising that the stuff that's that far down wouldn't have been quite as affected as stuff that's on the surface. Because there was, supposedly they climbed down pretty far. So, and some of the vegetation was definitely different. The water thing, yeah, that's a hard one to place. But I'm assuming there's certain parts of the Halo where certain pockets can still be sustain, just not the entire environment.
Right.
So from the perspective of the Cedrans, from Spartan Aiken and Macer, I think that was done pretty well. Macer's character at first, I thought it seemed like she knew too much stuff too conveniently at times, just with how it portrayed some of the stuff that she was able to point out during, like, when they were looking at the star map and some of the other stuff. But
right.
It was interesting to see another Spartan in Nightfall. I think that was a pretty cool addition to just introducing one other little piece that originates back to the original story for Halo, one of the original Spartan 2s.
Mm-hmm.
As far as that goes, I think their characters were probably the best fleshed out, especially Spartan Aikens. That one just seemed to really reflect how a Spartan would act.
Yeah, I feel like I got to know the Cedrans better than I did Locke.
I think at the beginning that's very true, and you really don't really learn anything about the Oni ops other than Locke through this. You kind of still have this mentality that the Oni ops are still just kind of unrespectful of other militia and military and governments for that point. But you really see Locke take an interesting turn and really kind of show respect and dignity in times of crisis where the other Oni guys were just kind of looking out for themselves.
Yeah.
Except Estrin. Estrin kind of still had this noble mentality, but you look at Ramos, he was not very kind to Estrin when he dropped him off the cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Horgan, of course, was like the typical, this is what you would expect of an Oni operative. Like he is as much Oni as Oni gets.
To me, Locke was supposed to be the main guy in this story, but to me, I felt bad for the farmers and stuff like that. Like I felt a little bit more emotional attachment to them, but with Locke, I didn't really feel too anything with him. Like he just felt like he was kind of there. Like, I mean, there was a lot of different things that he did that was, you know, cool, but the fact that Spartan, what's his name again? I completely
Aiken.
Aiken was, you know, sacrifices himself and kills, you know, activates the bomb and all that stuff. Like, I had more of an emotional attachment to him because he had more of a character, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if it was just the way the story was told or
I think
just,
a
I
lot
know,
of the storytelling in here was done pretty poorly. I mean, I hate to be that kind of person, especially when it comes to Halo, but I think the way the story was told to reflect the character I think they want to portray with Locke was done very poorly. Now, they told a great story from the perspective of going to this derelict part of the Halo ring, trying to figure out this mysterious element that's there and coming to find there's these Legolo worms that are heavily changed and pose a serious threat, and to see how the different people react in those situations, that was interesting to see. But from really learning and really knowing who Locke is as a character, especially when it comes to the fact that he's going to be one of the main characters in Halo 5, it's missing a lot.
Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, there's, I don't know, like, I feel in Ford on Tadon, they did a better job. Like,
oh, they did
can't
a lot
really
better
compare.
Job with Lasky.
Well, they did a lot better job, but the thing is, you know, you were learning his roots, you know, how he came to know the Covenant, the Chief, you know, all these different things. But when you're looking at Locke, you're just seeing a story of an incident that happened to him. You know what I mean? Like, we're to show a character, like a main character that's going to be in the next game, it just didn't feel, I don't know, it felt like it was missing something. Like, it really was. I didn't feel an emotional attachment to Locke. I didn't feel that there was a big thing like there was with Lasky. I mean, you see when Lasky, you can see all of his friends, you know, basically dying around him. You know, you have him learning from Chief, you know, what to do, and like all these different things. But it's with Locke, you know, he goes into this thing with a couple of people to get rid of something and then pull out, but he falls into a crisis. You know, it may be me just not like being too much of a critic, but it did not feel that it didn't portray his character to be a main character in Halo 5.
I kind of, well, not kind of, I pretty much completely agree with you. And it seems that the story that was portrayed for Locke in here is that typical, this is what you expect from a hero in this position, but this is what you expect from a noble person. It's just kind of that story retold over again for Locke, and there wasn't anything particular to really set his story apart from a lot of other stories that we've seen in other kinds of, I guess, like novels and tellings and whatnot. The only kind of distinct thing here is that it's based in the Halo universe.
Right.
There isn't that one thing that really kind of stands out as this was the defining moment where Locke made up his mind. You could see that at the beginning, he had his Oni works alone mentality. And then over the course of the Nightfall series, you see this, I'm kind of looking out for the good of the greater whole here, and I'm kind of doing the right thing, not necessarily what Oni's expected to do kind of thing. Which,
right.
I mean, it's an interesting story, but it's not one that really stands out. It's not one that's very iconic, that doesn't have that punch where it's like, oh, this is where Locke specifically overcomes some struggle and finds it within himself to to stand above the normal ways of how Oni would treat the situation. It seemed like it was just a very mediocre path. It's like, I'm going to do this Oni's way versus, oh, I'm going to do this the right way kind of thing. There wasn't really a defining moment where that just changed. It was more just like this gradual, okay, we're just going to change this over time to where we end up with a conclusion that's like, oh, he's kind of one of the good guys now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when they interviewed him and Kiki Wolfkill from IGN, when they released that trailer, you know, one of the things that he said that he's going to be a face of a Halo, a major face in the Halo franchise now, and they have to do it right. You know, that you're going to have to do this right. You're going to piss a lot of people off if you do it wrong. And it's not necessarily they're doing it wrong, but it didn't feel big enough. It didn't show in some sort of...
There's nothing unique about it.
Yeah, like there really isn't. Like there's no... I don't know. Like
there's nothing that makes this stand out from any other kind of hero story that turns away from what is normally expected of him in a certain role and looks out for the greater good. I mean, yeah, that's right. All noble and stuff, but when it comes to having a story that really clearly defines a character, you want something that's significant that you can relate to that character. And that just wasn't there. They just dropped it.
Yeah. It was, and another thing, I don't know if they blew it out a little too much, but I was expecting something a little bit more from a Ridley Scott production or association production.
Yeah.
Than this. Like that, I can understand if this was not known person to come out and finally like trying to sit there and get their name out, but this is Ridley Scott. Like he's made a lot of stuff, a lot of like he's made a lot of interesting movies and they came out almost perfect, it seemed. But with this, I don't know. Like, I was expecting a little bit more. I mean, I'm not trying to down Nightfall by any means, but coming from something like we've seen with Ford on to Dawn, like, that was really good. Like, I generally enjoyed that movie or that.
Yeah, movie. Yeah, a lot. Sure. Movie. It's a Fincher-like film in a sense.
Right. But I enjoyed that a lot. But going into this, you know, I had, oh, this is going to be darker and all this stuff, which it was, but it just wasn't. The story was just not there to me. Like, it really wasn't. Like, you introducing this type of character, I would have thought they would have done a different way of doing it. Like, I really thought they would have.
I definitely liked the story, the way they portrayed the story in Forward Unto Dawn. I got a lot more invested in the characters when Halo 4 came around. You know, I was really interested to see what had happened to Lasky, you know, in between the end of the movie or the, you know, end of the scene there at Corbulo Academy and then where you see him on Infinity. I was I was really interested in seeing what happened with Locke. It's like, okay, yeah, I want to know what happens next, but
you don't have that emotional drive.
I don't really have that drive to really want to find out.
Yeah, just you don't feel that connection that you did with Lasky.
Yeah, it really makes me wonder though, because I've talked with a lot of people and they come out to the same thing. It's like if we're gonna see this as a big character, and that it really is gonna really set what the mood's gonna be in to play this character. If it is the case, if we're gonna be able to play this character in Halo 5, it's not that great, especially like coming off this. People are saying, yeah, they better do a better story in Halo 5 with this guy compared to what they seen in Nightfall. And like I said, I'm not downing it, but I really wish that it would have been something a little bit more than what it was.
Yeah, and you just have to think about what do we expect now from Halo. I know there's lots of expectations high for good quality stuff to come out of Halo, but it's almost like it's gotten to the point where I hate to say this, but do we really expect the top-notch quality with 343 after Halo 4, after the Master Chief Collection? I mean, I want to see the best quality stuff for Halo, but is this just, like, too much with all that they're trying to do for the Halo franchise?
Yeah, it's a question of...
It's a concern.
You know, Yeah, it really is. I mean, we see a lot of faults with Halo 4. You know, that kind of downed a lot of people and they kind of turned away from the franchise for a little while. And then when they seen Halo 2 and the Master Chief Collection, like, that's never been done before. Mm-hmm. We see the best game franchise in one package plus more with every map that you could ever hope to play on in one multiplayer. That was incredible. You know, that was mind-blowing. But – and then the launch didn't go well at all. You know, the multiplayer was broke. At certain parts of it, it's still messed up. You know, you can't join cooperative campaign, which turned a lot of people down because that's what people were waiting for, is to see the new Halo 2 anniversary cutscenes and everything else and enjoy it with their friends. You know, mm-hmm. people couldn't do that. And then we have this this film that kind of isn't there either. You know, I think they're going a little too much with this. I think they need to stick with trying to make the next game better. Like, don't get me wrong, the fact that it's awesome that we got the Chief Collection and we have all these different things, but it's like we need to concentrate to make the Halo franchise solid. You know, we can't just constantly branch off and to do different things.
Right. You have to nail the core experience, which in this case is the video games.
Yeah.
Make sure that works the way that is expected that they want it to work. And then you can kind of dabble in the extra areas. But right now, as it stands, Halo 5 with Locke, I'm not entirely too sure. I'm more excited for the Chief perspective than the Locke perspective right now, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not trying to be hard on that at all. Like, I'm not trying to be an idiot, but it's just from what I'm seeing so far, I'm really not looking forward to seeing Locke in there. I'm really not. I mean, to be honest with you, those two cutscenes that we've seen in Halo 2 seemed a lot better than more anxious to see him in it than Nightfall did. Like, as sad as it is, you know, I'm sorry if I hurt anybody's feelings by any means, but that's how it's kind of feeling right now.
Godzilla, you've been a little quiet. Any thoughts?
I agree. I mean, it's
plain and simple.
Yeah, it's Nightfall was nowhere near what I was expecting. I was expecting a whole lot more of Locke's backstory, because I mean, that's the way they promoted it, and it just wasn't there. I mean, you have, yes, this is backstory because it's, you know, before Halo 5, but it's one mission.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
where in Forward Into Dawn, you know, this took place over, you know, several days, weeks, we don't know for sure, but, you know, at least days. And we got to see a lot more of what shaped, you know, the past stuff that shaped Lasky, not just this one event, but, you know, the death of his brother, you know, all this other stuff.
You know, yeah, I mean,
that kind of shaped who he was.
To with this, it kind of seemed like we're looking at a detail into his career as a soldier or an agent of Oni, you know, more or less than, you know, what was that defining moment of him maybe changing. But that's just it right there, that we don't know. Like, that's the same question that we're constantly asking. Why is he chasing Chief? Like, is he going for him to get rid of him? You know, is there a reasoning for that? Like, we don't know if he's going to be good. We don't know if he's going to be bad. Like, it just, I think with this movie or show, I think we're seeing that, and this is just me rambling on, but I think we're going to see something like this in Halo 5 too, to where he's sent on a mission to maybe knock Chief off, like kill him or something, get rid of him, and maybe him seeing a different side to why he's doing it. I think that may have to be, that may be a big part. Like, that's kind of what we've seen in this. Maybe that's kind of what they're kind of showing, but I think that may be a reason. I mean, like, I don't know.
The way that, if we take what they portrayed of Locke in Nightfall and apply it to Halo 5, Now, what we're going to see is Locke's being sent out to go find Chief for a specific reason. But when he finds Chief, he realizes that there's probably going to be some bigger objective that Chief is going on. And will probably end up following Chief.
Yeah.
If the same kind of context applies, which that's kind of the strange feeling that is being portrayed right now. That's going to be the driving force behind the plot of Halo 5.
Well, I mean, it's the same plot that was pretty much in Halo 2. You have two characters right. that are on opposite side of the same fight. By the end of the, you know, by the end of the game, they're working to, you know, into that particular portion of the story, they're working together to stop a greater evil. So it's a, it could be one of those things that, you know, Chief is going to stop something that threatens all life or humanity, whatever. And Oni doesn't quite understand what Chief's going after. So they send Locke out after him to stop him. And in the process of Locke chasing him down, he figures out what Chief's actually doing and actually sides with Chief. You know, that's one of the probabilities.
Yeah, that seems like the likely possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this is something that we've, you know, I'm grateful that we've seen this. You know, it kind of throws in a little bit more lore and stuff of Halo and the franchise. You know, like, I'd rather see it visually than, you know, like, read about it or so. Like, that's just my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. But going into this being a little bit more hyped than probably most, you know, like, when I seen Forward Unto Dawn, I didn't know how to take it. Like, with me, you have to nail it a certain way. Like, and I think Forward Unto Dawn did that perfectly. I think they nailed it. You know, there was a couple things here and there that kind of didn't ring with me a little bit. But I think they did an amazing job. But with this, they didn't, I don't know, going into this, what you know, having a no-name director like Ridley Scott, you have just everyone looking at this hoping it's going to be huge, you know, it's just, I don't know, it just didn't really fulfill what I thought it was going to be.
The whole thing just seemed really rushed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I don't really know. I mean, it's an interesting story, but it's a detail that I honestly could have go into Halo 5 not knowing that and still had a better outlook of Locke than what I seen with this.
Yeah, I think, you know, if the storyline that we're thinking is correct, yeah, you know, we could get that through playing the game. We wouldn't need this backstory to get, you know, come to the same conclusion.
Well, I think that it does provide some amount of backstory to Locke. I just think it doesn't really add something distinct and something unique. Well, distinct, unique, same thing. Something that really stands out for Locke within the Halo universe. I think that it's just, he's a bland character right now. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of cool to see some of the stuff, but he's just, there's nothing there to really get hyped about what he has to bring to Halo 5.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, bland's probably the perfect phrase to put it right now. And the thing is, I have a feeling we're going to see a lot better of Locke than in Halo 5. I think we're going to see a lot more, you know. But I don't, as of right now, I could have dealt without Nightfall and went into Halo, like I said before, going to Halo 5 and probably experienced him in that and have a better experience with him in that than I did with Nightfall. Like, there's, to me, that this was kind of a more, you know, let's throw it. Like, they, I don't know, I'm rambling on, but, like, I really wish they could have done something a little bit differently. Like, maybe go in and go into Halo and, like, find something to, I don't know. Like, they could have done something a little bit more with the story, in my opinion. Like, they really could have.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where, unfortunately, it's what's done is done. And we have to just think about what's going to be coming down the pipeline with Halo 5. Hopefully they'll have something that can shed a little more light on Locke's character in there. But as far as it's looking right now, you know, there's not much going behind Locke as a character. I'm still more interested in what Chief's doing than how Locke is playing a part of Halo 5.
Yeah.
I think the purpose of showing Locke's origin story, as they claimed it to be, I wouldn't call this a smashing success.
Yeah, no, I don't.
I wouldn't call it a ballooning failure, but I definitely wouldn't call it a smashing success.
Yeah, I mean, it was more or less of it being there and trying to show something than not. I don't think people had the expectations of this is going to be incredible and, you know, everybody's going to sit there and like absolutely love it. I think this was just trying to show what they're going to be doing from here on out, like trying to show different things. Like, and I mean, that's just showing it off with introducing Locke as a character. You know, it's why is he even in Halo 5? Like, it just makes me really wonder is like, why is he a part or why is he going to be a main character?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is, are they going to maybe get rid of Chief in some way, you know, and then move on to the next person to continue the franchise?
Well, I hate to say it, but that next person is not Locke right now.
Yeah, no, in my opinion, if it is Locke, I'm not entirely thrilled with any means at all. Like, I'd rather have Lasky become a Spartan and him have some sort of backstory and then him try to take it on than what Locke is. I mean,
or even Thorne for that case.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I thought he was dead.
No. Gabriel Thorne's not dead. At the end of Spartan Ops, he's not dead.
No, I thought they killed him off in a comic. Never mind.
Oh.
Maybe they didn't.
It's been a while since I've read through the Escalation comics, or I haven't even read the Initiation ones yet, so I don't know, maybe they did. I have to go back and check those, to be honest. Honestly, don't remember. But, yeah, I think, I mean, if he's still alive, though, which I think he is.
But, yeah, you know, I would definitely agree with you. Thorne
would be a great character to have as...
Yeah, would be a great, great character to take that role. I don't think we're going to see the end of Chief, at least for probably the next 2 to 3 games. At least I hope not, because, you know, by then I'm going to retire, and then I won't be playing games anymore. But, yeah, it's... It will be a big change for the franchise when they do retire the Master Chief character, because, you know, there's got to be some point where just to follow the, you know, the lore and the, you know, the timeline of the universe, he's going to have to give up eventually.
Yeah.
You know, whether because he gets too old and slow and gets killed, or, you know, he just decides he's had enough and disappears. You know,
well,
you don't know.
Let's remember the lifespan of the games, as far as Chief is concerned, is only a matter of less than a year of actual playtime. I mean, we have a 4-year, 7-month span, but he was in cryo during that whole time. So if you think about it, not that much time has actually elapsed in the Halo games.
No, actually, Chief is in his 40s. And that's not counting time. Not counting the time in cryosleep either.
Right. So he's not.
I'm not saying he's over the hill yet. God, no, because, you know, he's older than I am. But, actually, I think we'd probably be about the same age. I did the math wrong. I probably did the math wrong. But anyway, it's just that, you know, he's getting to the, depending on how far the Halo series goes, you know, the guy's going to get old eventually.
Yeah, I mean, true. you can't continue a character on forever. Like, it's just not possible. But
think about how it's currently set up within the Halo universe. I think for Master Chief, in order for him to kind of disappear from the woodwork, it's going to be there's some big discovery of foreigner technology or some resemblance of this is where humanity's place is within the Halo universe. And that would be the time to either A, Master Chief has this noble sacrifice, or B, he nobly retires, or... or something like that.
In my opinion, I honestly think I would like to see Chief go out in a heroic sacrifice. That way, you know, I don't want, if he goes or whatever, I don't want there to be any sort of, oh, he could come back. Like, I don't want to see that at all.
You don't want a Halo 3 ending.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't want that. Like, where Cortana is right now, it's, if they were to just get rid of her character, that's not, I don't like that. Like, I'd rather see, as horrible as it does sound, I would honestly rather see Chief actually die and know that he's never coming back than, oh, well, he's in retirement, that he could come back if there's something huge going on. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather see that.
I don't think he necessarily has to die. I think there's a lot of things that they could utilize him in terms of telling the foreigner side of things and how that all connects back to humanity. I think there's lots of room for that. And there's always the part where he could become digitized like the librarian is.
True.
That's true. Basically assumes, or I don't know, maybe it could be something as big as he's the first to really assume the mantle.
Right.
True.
Or access the domain, finally.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as it stands right now, like, if, say, for instance, that is the case, if they are trying to maybe retire Chief in some way, like, say, like, this is just hypothetical, but if I came up to you to say, well, Chief's going to make, like, just this hypothetical, Chief is going to die in Halo 5 and Locke is going to take his place, I'm not satisfied with that by any means as of right now. Like, showing off with Nightfall, there's no, I would be a little bit more pissed than anything else. But the question really still stands out the most. Why is Locke even involved with this? Like, what's his story going to be in Halo 5? And I think that's like, I'm clinging on to Locke as a character a little bit more as to why he's in it than he's going to be in it and why is he going after Chief.
Right. To be honest, I got more of a character development from the Cedrans than Locke. And even the two smugglers. Like, he actually felt a little more emotional connection with them than Locke.
Yeah. Yeah, I, like I said before, Spartan... Oh my gosh, I can't remember his name for the life of me. Aiken. Spartan Aiken. They showed him a little bit more than they showed Locke. Like, how he was a Spartan to... Or how he was a Spartan and then like where he came to be now. Like, that was a little bit more backstory what they ever gave with Locke. Like, you know what I mean? There's...
You know what? At the very end, when it showed you that he had three white beads, was an emotional draw right there. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
That defines him as a character. And that was his defining moment. And Locke did not have one of those moments. This seemed more like Aiken's story than it seemed like Locke's story, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I would agree. I would have to agree. I mean, Aiken as a character stood out to me more as the main character. Like, if I went into this not knowing this is a backstory for Locke or, you know, what was the reasoning for anything, I would honestly say that Aiken was probably the main character in this. I really, really do. Like, if not having any knowledge of what Locke was or who he was at all.
I could see where you could come out with that from watching the series.
And I like how I have the support of David Ford and the Don here in the chat. I'm not totally BSing all of this. It was an all right series as far as all of Nightfall is concerned, but there were definite parts that could have been a lot more fleshed out. The production, it was pretty good. You could definitely tell where some of the CGI... I don't know. The CGI that they did for the worms still seems really weird.
The CGI that they did with the Elite, the Zealot, was really weird. Like, I don't know if it was my TV.
Well, no.
Like, it was the same thing on mine, too.
They just animated that thing very horribly. It was slow. It was sluggish. Like, it was not what you would expect from an Elite at all. And it was to compensate for the acting of Locke, I think. Which is unfortunate because that whole setup just completely killed the mood for a lot of people when it came to the Nightfall series. Like, you usually have this nice big setting where you open everything up, you have this ground floor story that's going to help build the rest of the story and build the rest of the what you're trying to portray. And it just didn't do a good job. It fell flat on its face. I get the whole point of the Elite Zealots trying to test out this new weapon. I mean, that bit of the story, that's interesting. But the way it was executed, like them starting out in the woods, tracking down this traitor, and then there was an Elite Zealot there with the dropship. The animation, the CGI, it was lackluster.
Yeah.
I think the dropship was the best part of all the CGI.
It leaving, yeah. The whole, like, weird, like, mm-hmm. It's almost like the heat blurriness that you get whenever you see something hot or something. It was mm-hmm. like that. That seemed really cheap, that CGI. But the whole dropship taking off thing, that was pretty cool.
The skybox that we're seeing when they're on the ring, I really, really liked. Like, I like the fact that, like, it had that almost, I know it's not like that, but it almost looked like a aurora kind of in a way, like how the clouds were really swirly and you have that red heat from the sun. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. I liked that. But I don't know. The worm, like the basically the main enemy in this whole thing, the worms, didn't really thrill me.
They were way too shiny.
And way too shaky. Seriously, it looked like every single one of them was having a seizure anytime you looked at one. Seriously.
Oh, well, I mean, man. They do gotta they gotta wiggle to move, so
it's true.
Yeah, but they wiggle, yes, they don't go.
Yeah. It's not like having
a seat. I mean, seriously, they were all like vibrating whenever they were moving in like this one big group. And then when they like slowed down and like jumping from place to place, that's what. Okay. And here's another thing. So they mentioned that. That's funny. I like the Star Trek reference, David. There was the part where they mentioned that the Lagoko worms could pick up the weapons and could pick up like the EM that you put off. And we saw in certain parts where the Lagolo worms, that's a hard word to say, were able to kind of sense humans nearby and they would consume them in the later episodes. But at the beginning, when they were like behind that shield and they broke the shield and they started turning everything off, they just completely went by them. So I'm not sure like what changed between episode or chapter 2 to chapter 3 and 4, or did I miss something?
They just got more hungry. That's all it was. They did.
Maybe that's it.
They were sweating. Their meat or something was tenderizing better. I don't know. They were just more hungry at the end.
I mean, one way you could look at it is the fact that they were all still in their, well, I guess, no, that doesn't make sense because the Cedrans weren't wearing armor. They were just wearing EVA suits.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just going to go with my answer. They were more hungry at the end.
I like that bio. That's a good one.
They were hungrier. Therefore, they were more sensitive to the EM fields.
No, I'm full right now. We'll get you later.
Well, they did eat horses in the beginning, so.
Yeah, I meant to say Stargate reference earlier. I thought I said Stargate, not Star Trek. So, sorry, David. Yeah, that was another thing that I pointed out, or that stuck out to me, that was kind of odd. And yeah, I guess that's kind of all I have for, I mean, Nightfall. I mean, we're kind of being very picky, I think. But for something that was as hyped up as this was,
mm-hmm.
I would give this a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm not going to rate that. I don't need people going,
I will say I enjoyed watching
it was an all right the show.
Yes,
yeah, it was enjoyable.
There's a lot of stuff in there that doesn't make sense, and you just kind of have to chalk it up to, you know, whatever trips your trigger, but I enjoyed watching the show. I really wish there was more in there about Locke and that it, you know, like Bio says, you know, it seems more like Randall's story than Locke's story.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's, I was expecting something more along the lines of Forward Unto Dawn, you know?
Yeah.
You know, in that respect, it was very disappointing to me.
And now it's just like disappointment after disappointment after disappointment, or I guess not disappointment necessarily, but unfulfillment with Halo 4, yeah. The Master Chief Collection, and now this. You know, I want to be optimistic. I'm going to be optimistic about Halo, but in reality, I'm just not sure.
Yeah, it's... I would like to be... I like being an optimistic person, but there's a lot of negative. And when you're in a lot of negative and people talking a lot of negative, there's a lot of negative that's going to be coming out of it. You know, you go to Twitter, to Facebook, to YouTube, and you see these people talking about, you know, this was a downhill decline ever since Halo 4, you know, between the competitive, the story, or just everything in general. And then you had the Chief Collection, then you had this, you know, it's like, what were we going to expect for Halo 5? The only thing, you know, and this isn't me saying, this is people saying it, but they said the only thing that we're looking forward to as of now is just the beta. You know, that's the only thing that
they
can honestly say that may
nail
turn
that
out
thing.
Good.
They really do.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Let me take that back. They have to nail it in terms of they deliver a product that is completely playable as they expect it. Not aside from the fact that, yeah, some of the stuff's probably going to be imbalanced. Some of the features people probably might not like. But from just a purely functional perspective, they have to nail the beta.
It needs to be stable.
Yeah, it has to be stable for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, but you could see where the community is as of before they announced the beta, because when they had leaks of, you know, 5-second clips of aiming down your sights with the smart scope. I was going to say smart sight, but I was saying it wrong. But smart scope, you have everything like that, the running, the clambering, the fist jump, smash, whatever you want to call that. Just all that stuff, like, people were extremely negative. And I think that's where a lot of the Halo community is as of right now, is just negative. You know, they're tired of what could be a letdown. You know what I mean? They don't want to see it anymore. And when people seen that, they're trying to take different things off of different games, which that's not the case, but that's what they say it is. I don't know. There's the Halo community really needs something to boost their hype for like this game. And I think with the Halo 5 beta coming out, if they don't do that, we're going to have a lot of disappointed fans that may walk away from the franchise. As sad as it is to say, I think that's the truth.
Well, Dust said it on a previous podcast, you know, they really need to innovate.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't innovate without pissing people off. There are going to be people out there that are not going to like your new ideas. The, you know, the sprint. Yeah. I like the idea of the sprint where, you know, your shields don't recharge while you're sprinting. Anyway, but you know, I don't know what's the counterbalance to the ground pound or your thruster pack ability, or, you know, is there anything to the clamber? You know, is the clamber just a simple mobility thing, or, you know, is it something that needs to be, you know, there needs to be a weight against it?
Right. But that's all the stuff that they're trying to figure out from an implementation perspective of what works, what doesn't work, what people are fans of and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So if that's not really nailed down right now, that's fine. They're looking for that kind of feedback. But making sure that the game launches, that you find matchmaking games, if there is options for you to party up, that you can party up without the unfortunate side effects of what's going through with the Master Chief Collection, then that's the things that they need to really make sure that is working to the best of its ability before releasing the beta. And I know that having the beta means it's a beta. This is not final code, but as most console gamers, they don't understand what the true concept of a beta is.
Yeah.
So for those listening here, here's your lesson to take home. A beta is unfinished code. Unfinished code. This is not meant to be final in any way whatsoever. There are going
at least with this beta.
There are going to be bugs. There are going to be things that are unbalanced. That's the reason why they're having it out this early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, though, we're saying that they have to nail this beta, but that's kind of the reason why they're having it. You know, we're not looking to nail the beta. We're looking to nail the initial multiplayer, what's going to be out when it launches. You know, we're going to be testing. We're going to be giving a crap load of feedback. You know, you're going to have people doing, you know, constructive criticism through tweets. You have YouTube videos. I'll probably be doing, we're going to be talking on the podcast. You know, they're going to be listening and looking for everything that we're going to be talking about. And that's what's going to ultimately be what our multiplayer is. So it's going to be important to give out true stuff. Like, a lot of people like to just point out the petty stuff that doesn't really make a difference at all. You know, we have, a lot of people didn't like sprint. So what they're going to do with that, they're going to lower your shields to where you're not going to have any while you're sprinting. I think that's perfect. You know, I enjoyed sprint in Halo 4. I like the fast motion pace of the game. You know, that's just me. I know a lot of people like Halo 2 and Halo 3, how you didn't have any of that. The one thing I didn't like was the fact that you had these armor abilities that really changed up the game, the flow of the game. You know, everybody's going to have this. So they are taking consideration of what we're talking about, but what this beta is going to do, we're definitely going to have to give out a lot of constructive criticism on that. Yeah, as of now, it looks incredible. To me, it looks really good, but we're going to find out a lot of different things when we get hands on it.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, I'm pretty much reserving all my comments on, you know, how much I like it or hate it until after I get my hands on it.
I mean, well, that's just it right there. People are automatically, now there are people that did play it. You know, that's fair. Mm-hmm. They did play it. They can put their opinions out if they want to. But the people that haven't had any sort of play time, the only thing that they are judging it by is through gameplay. That's, you're not immersed in the experience. You don't have the controller in front of you where you can make judgments for yourself. You're seeing another person's point of view. You're not doing it for yourself, so you can't say anything. Yeah, sure, like there's going to be something in the game that you don't like, but you're not going to be able to fully say what you think until it comes out. Which is
true.
It's just, I don't understand where people are immediately saying, well, this game's and this beta is going to suck. Or, you know, they're doing things that shouldn't be in the game. Give it a chance. You know, go into there. From what I've heard from people that have actually played the game, they said it's incredible. You know, it's extremely fast paced. It's definitely an evolution of a arena shooter for Halo. You have all these, I'm hearing good things about it. You know, give it a shot. You know, there's not a lot to be said unless you've played the game.
Yeah, everybody that I've heard talk about it that's actually played the game has had a lot more good things to say about it than they've had bad.
Yeah.
You know, they voiced their concern, said, you know, this doesn't seem quite right, but, you know, they've only got a few hours of playtime with it. So, you know, they haven't really mastered the new abilities yet, or, you know, the game mechanics. So, you know, there's always that question in there. And I mean, you know, I've formulated some of my own opinions just by watching gameplay, but, you know, I haven't really nailed them down yet. I mean, I've got some things that, you know, I don't know that I'm going to like it, but I don't know that until I actually have the controller in my hand and I'm playing it. Yeah. You know, until I can feel how it, you know, how it operates and, you know, how smoothly it feels, you know, how well it integrates into the gameplay. You know, is it something, you know, what is the counter to it? You know, so you know, it's stuff like that. And anybody that is, you know, posting their opinions out there, I mean, don't get me wrong, you're more than welcome to post your opinion. There's a very famous saying that I would say, but I want to keep this clean anyway. but you know, your opinions on that subject, I really don't take them to heart until you actually play the game. If yeah. you've played the game, then I'll accept your opinion as being, you know, something that you truly do not like or you do like.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's people out there right now that are really voicing out there. It's calmed down a lot. It really has. but there's a lot of emotion flying around when the Chief Collection come out, when it came out. And it just, after seeing that, I kind of don't want to be on Twitter when the Fallout 5 beta comes out. I do when I'm hearing good things, but when it comes around like just negativity all the time, I really don't want to be around it because it ruins the experience. It really does.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of negativity on Twitter and Facebook and on the forums when the Halo 5 beta comes out. I just hope that the positives are out there just as strong.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the things that people like, that they voice that as well.
Yeah. That's where a block button comes in handy. But,
yep. That works too. But,
rude way of doing it, but you know what? To keep things out of the way.
I'm going
to
mute you and I'm going to mute you. Sounds like when I was playing Halo 3.
Ouch.
Mm.
You know, everybody's got the 12-year-old. Don't tell me you haven't. Yeah.
No, I know what you're talking about. Well, you know, Reach does that for you. If people don't constantly mute, it mutes it for you so you don't have to deal with it. So
I've noticed that. Matter of fact, Tuesday, we jumped into a game, and I had four people muted, and I don't ever remember their gamer tags. Now, granted, I've played against a lot of people, and I don't remember everybody's gamer tag. But generally, if I mute them, I remember at least part of the gamer tag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, that's interesting. Okay. I guess I don't want to talk to them.
Yeah. That's going to kind of wrap it up, I think, for our Nightfall discussion. I don't think, is there anything else that you guys wanted to bring up?
Not really. No. As soon as I say that, it's going to pop up as soon as it's over. But as of right now, no.
Oh, I do want to add one little thing to our little sprint discussion. I want somebody to go over to a soldier and tell him when somebody's shooting at him, he's not allowed to run. Okay?
But this is a video game. This isn't real life.
Well, everybody is always clamoring for more realistic shooters.
Yeah.
And I want you to tell me that there is a soldier out there that if you tell him he can't run just because somebody's shooting at him, that he won't run.
Yeah.
And we are talking, you know, in the case of Halo, we are talking about a soldier in a power assisted armor system and he can't run. I'm like, wait a minute here.
He's too heavy.
But no, that's all I wanted to add to there.
That's always a tricky thing with multiplayer. And I think I've said this before somewhere, whether Twitter or on the podcast, but it's a very tricky balance between lore and multiplayer balance, because Halo is one of those games where if it's in the campaign, it's going to be in the multiplayer kind of thing. So that's a tricky, like, you have to sacrifice some things that are easily explainable in the lore perspective just to balance out the fun of multiplayer because of the nature of how Halo works.
Well, it's true. And, you know, Halo 4 proved that with them trying to integrate the, you know, the lore into multiplayer. You know, it worked, you know, mostly, but you know, there are some things that kind of don't quite add up. But you know, and I understand that. It's just, you know, people have just, you know, they're, you know, I keep hearing people say, you know, Sprint doesn't even belong in the universe. I'm like, wait a minute. Yes, it does, and it is already in the universe. But you know, to that point, I like that, you know, I'm not saying just put Infinite Sprint in. I like the fact that they're about, you know, that they've balanced it with that shield, with, you know, that your shield's not recharging. You know, as long as it's got a balance, I don't mind it being there. And I honestly have never really had a problem with Sprint. You know, yes, I run away from fights, but 9 times out of 10, I die anyway.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's not like I'm getting away, you know, getting away from them, because, you know, I can sprint. Well, so can they.
Well, and think about this, too. Every other major first person shooter game has sprint. Every single one. Battlefield. Yeah. Call of Duty.
Call of Duty's had
Destiny. Gears of War. Titanfall. They have sprint. It's not a broken mechanic. And hate to break it to you guys, but Halo needs to evolve, combat evolve, joke, as a franchise. It's not going to be something that's going to be stagnant every single time. It's a reiteration of stuff like they did for Call of Duty between Modern Warfare 2 and 3. It's not something that 343 is just going to sit back and it's like, okay, let's rehash the game again because that's what the vocal minority wants. No, they're going to innovate.
Yeah.
They're going to try to add something new to the franchise to keep it fresh, to keep it interesting, and to keep it to where the franchise can actually live on. If you don't want the mechanics to change, don't play the game that changes. In other words, keep on playing the same exact games, and it's not going to change.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is, it's like you're not – it's hard. It really is. You're going to try to evolve the game that you know and love so much, but people are going to get pissed. People are going to get extremely aggravated when there's something that they like as – like. Going back to what a lot of people say is that, you know, when you go to Halo, it's a different experience. And when you're involving sprint, clamber, all these different things, you're making it more like Call of Duty, Battlefield, Titanfall, all these different things. But you got to take in consideration of this. It's like you have a huge community of people like that are dropping from the game because it's not different. It's the same thing over and over and over again. Now, granted, we have that with Call of Duty, but I'd rather – like that's – I've said it all the time and people get aggravated when I say it is I want to see a change. When I seen Halo 2 Anniversary and when I seen the Master Chief Collection, you know, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy that I'm going to be playing it and enjoying Halo 2 like almost like for the first time with other friends. But I was looking for Halo 5. I really was. Like it is as bad as it is to say – I've told hundreds of people this. I want to see what the next game's going to be like. You know, if I'm going to – what they learned from Halo 4, you know, what are they going to change in Halo 5? And that's the way I feel it. I may sound like an idiot or something, but it's the truth. I really want to know what Halo 5 is going to be like.
Well, with the launch of the Master Chief Collection, I'm kind of really glad that this launch was not Halo 5. They take that extra year of dev time on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Master Chief Collection, that's an enormous project. I mean, to take, you know, to just condense all that information or all four of those games into one disc and have it all work together. You know, you've got five different multiplayers trying to talk to each other. You have four different campaigns, you know, or I should say trying to work through the same UI. It's a daunting task. And I give them props for taking it on. Yes, it was full of bugs. But it's a massive undertaking. They should have, you know, I really wish they'd have polished it out more. But we've got what we've got, and it's getting better.
It is. That is true. To your Halo 5 comment, though, I'm hesitant to say that it's getting the full three-year dev time because half the studio has been working on the Master Chief Collection, and then half the studio has been working on Halo 5. So we're not even seeing a full studio engagement into Halo 5 development.
Yeah, but honestly, how many employees does 343 have?
I want to say it's around 450 to 500, I think.
Okay, well, how many did Bungie have developing Halo 2 and Halo 3?
I don't know, actually.
Yeah, you know, if we want to play, you know, if you want to make that point, you know, let's compare the two. You know, granted, you know, 343 is still a new studio and, you know, Bungie's a more established studio. But honestly, with what Bungie put out with Destiny, I'm not really that impressed for being such an established studio to put that out.
I hate to say it.
You know, I'm not saying that Destiny is a terrible game. I do enjoy playing the game. But it's got some things that are they're really major bugs for me.
Yeah, they need to address it within the development time. Well, that they it's had. Like
I've been debating over the last week and a half if I was even going to buy the DLC.
Yeah,
I mean, and after buying it, I'm like, yeah, I'm done. I mean, once you know, I did buy the expansion pass, so I do get the next two DLCs, but that's it for me. I mean, I like, you know, it's kind of okay the way they did it with the DLC, and I didn't expect a huge change in the way they told story, but it's the exact same thing with a different voice.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it right there. It's like Bungie's told an incredible story with Halo. Halo CE was like for their first game that was incredible. You know, they had
first game on the Xbox. Wasn't their first game.
Yeah, it wasn't their first game. They put it.
Yeah, this let me rephrase that for the console, for Xbox. When they first came out with that, that was an incredible game. I love it. I still love it to this day. Like they set a franchise and a lore and everything in that one particular game, and then they came out with two. Two was you know, it kind of it at the ending, and there was a couple things that a lot of people didn't like with it, but it introduced a new side of that story. You had two different sides of the story, then you had three, and then you my favorite Halo of all time was ODST, and they put what it was only supposed to be a DLC, and they put a year into development or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was incredible. That was like in that short amount of time, like that was insane. But for them to come out with Destiny and just have like a 5-year old chop out like the like what major plot points were supposed to be in the story, it just doesn't. It's not Bungie. It really is. It doesn't seem something went wrong in that particular in that development time. I don't know what it is. I don't know what, but the story part of that was a joke. It really was. And it was just when I was done playing it, I was like, "You can't be serious!" Like I'm talking with people all the time. I was like, "This isn't. This is what we've been hyped about for this entire time." You know, there's. I don't know. Like it.
Yeah, at least, I was just using that, you know, as an example to, you know, kind of say that. You know, 343 is not the only one that's disappointed me in the, you know, in this last year. I mean, I'll play Halo until I can't pick up a controller. I love the game. I love the universe that much. And as long as they're telling a good story in the campaign, I will keep playing the game.
Yeah. I mean,
because I've always been the story guy.
Yeah.
When it comes to multiplayer, I am not. By no means, despite what I posted on Twitter today,
that was good crazy.
Halo player. You know, that was just one of those random freak games. But you know, I would say I'm probably average or just below. That's just my assessment. You know, there's no way I could go even close to a semi-pro in multiplayer. I regularly get my butt handed to me, but I still have fun playing it.
Yeah.
You know, even with Sprint, even with the armor abilities, I still have fun playing it. Don't get me wrong. It frustrates the heck out of me most of the time. But it's a way for me to release the day's stress and put it to something and not, you know, go around punching walls and stuff. But
okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know. It's just. This whole new generation of consoles has been a real disappointment, in my opinion. It really has. Like, we've had so many buggy games. We had Battlefield 4. We had Destiny. We have the Master Chief Collection. We have all these things. Things are getting more advanced. You know, there's a lot more things that are going into games than what we've seen with 360. And I just hope that we're not going to be in, like, I don't know, 2 to 3 years' time from now – to expect a what seems to be a broken game, and we can expect a patch to fix it later on. Mm-hmm. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems like that's what's been going on with Xbox One and PlayStation and everything else. You know, with 360, I didn't see too much of that.
Well, the 360 in its early days, yeah, I was not an early adopter of the 360. I actually didn't get one until like the month before Halo 3 released. But from what I understand, because I was following it, the 360, yeah, it had some software bugs with games, which were quickly patched. But you know, their major problem with the 360 was hardware. You know, the early Xboxes, you know, they were getting the red ring.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why they had the extended the warranty on them and all this stuff. I mean, you know, even now, you know, there are some of the original Xbox 360s that you could still technically get repaired, you know, if it's their first time at no charge. You know, it's just every console generation has its problems. The original Xbox, I owned it for 2 months, and I get a letter from Microsoft demanding that I send them my power cord.
Your power cord?
What?
They had a defect in the power cords that was actually setting the consoles on fire.
Oh, okay. That's...
Yeah, don't get me... They sent me a power cord, but they wanted the old one back.
Right.
You know, to make sure that I wasn't still using it. And it's like, okay? And it's like, you know, they were very polite about it. Don't get me wrong. They you know, they weren't like holding a gun to my head or anything, but they were strongly encouraging me to send, you know, to change the power cord and send this in. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but you.
So I did.
I mean, there's been evolution ever since the Xbox and 360 and all that stuff. I mean, yeah, we can expect bugs in the next console, but like to have games this broken, like the biggest one. You know, people are going to talk all they want about Chief Collection, you know, fine, great, you know, but you got to take in consideration of what EA did with Battlefield. They were getting death threats from the stupid game. It crashed. You couldn't play online.
Well, Assassin's Creed's the same way.
Exactly. So it's like,
I mean, it was unplayable. I kind of expected with Master Chief Collection that it was going to have problems because this is a huge project we're talking about.
Exactly.
I expected to have some problems, nowhere near on this scale though.
Right.
You know, I did expect to have some issues with matchmaking, you know, game times being a little long, stuff like that. Yeah, I never expected this. Yeah. I didn't expect it to, you know, to transfer into the campaigns as well.
Right. The thing is, the question that I'm asking is what is developers going to have to do to fix that? What is it that they're going to have to do? I mean, like, is it an extra year of development time, more betas? Like, I don't understand what's going on development side. I mean, you have a lot of games going out that are just broken.
I think it's developers and Microsoft are still learning the quirks of the new Xbox Live. And don't get me wrong, it took... When they went to 360, it took them some time to get get Xbox Live figured out where everything ran smoothly. I mean, even when Halo 3 launched, they were still having a few bugs with Xbox Live. You know, things weren't working exactly how they thought they would. It was nowhere near the scale of problems with any of the games that launched. I think the fact that they're switching from a peer-to-peer to a server or a server-based online, experience is something that's just kind of thrown the developers for a loop. You know, I understand that, you know, these guys have gone to school, you know, they've got years of experience in computer coding and stuff, but, you know, there's always that one little mistake that you don't catch until it's, you know, it's out there in the wild.
Part of it, I think, is Xbox needs to be a little more
lenient.
No, not lenient.
Well, probably more open about, you know, what they're doing with their service.
That, and when it comes to development, they actually support a lot of the bigger developers out there when it comes to, okay, this is how the live service works. Actually get some testing done kind of on the production system to make sure stuff like this doesn't happen, where apparently there's a big gap between testing in lab versus testing in real world Xbox Live and all that kind of stuff. And you would think that at least for something like the Master Chief Collection, it would have been a hand-in-hand working thing that you would want to get this game off the ground without any major hiccups. And that just didn't happen.
I mean, Microsoft has a whole division that is devoted to, you know, launching games on Xbox Live. You know, when a new game goes online, they have an entire staff that sit there and monitor the community and, you know, monitor how the games are going, look for the bugs, you know, try to fix the bugs. You know, that is, you know, they have staff members that do that with every launch. You know, maybe they need to get those same staff members involved earlier in the game's production, you know, before it goes live. But, you know, it's hard to simulate. You know, a lot of these bugs probably could have been fixed in the lab, but, you know, it's hard to simulate millions of people firing your game up.
True.
Yeah.
Just from the perspective that I've done some code development before.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem like there would be this many issues with the game. And even the builds that were there for the Invitational, I mean, those builds were crashing. And if that was, and that build was supposedly like a build that was made, I don't know, like maybe 3 to 6 weeks prior to that. And if the game is still crashing and that unstable at that point, you would think maybe considering bumping a game back would be something to consider. But again, I'm not the studio. I don't know. Internal politics, there's stuff that is way beyond our control, and I'm sure way beyond their control that they couldn't delay it or something like that. But it just kind of begs the question to what exactly happened that was not caught in the lab. But that's just my own kind of like techie nerdy side kind of want to know some of the inner details.
Yeah, I think, a project this ambitious and this huge, I think it's something that should have been actually, I don't know how they'd accomplish this, but launched in stages. You know, like on November 11th, Halo 2 goes live. And then, you know, a couple months down the road, they bring in Halo CE or Halo 3 or Halo 4, you know, just to kind of spread the load out on, you know, what the engine has to do. I don't know that it would be even possible, you know, to offer an entire game as DLC, but, you know, not to mention, you know, people having to download that much actual extra content, that could piss a lot of people off. But, you know, when you've got a project of this magnitude, some things just need to be done differently.
Yeah, pretty much. Hopefully it's something that they'll learn for Halo 5. Hopefully it's something that Xbox learns from a service perspective. And from here, let's just hope for the best.
I think they've learned to never do this again.
Well, depends on what this is. 'Cause
4 games on one disc.
Not necessarily not do that again, but the way that they tested and implemented the game, maybe that they should consider, okay, maybe we need to have these certain checks in place to make sure games can actually pass certification without players really worrying about whether or not it is stable kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, no more random tangents, I'm assuming. Everyone's kind of satisfied. Okay.
I'm done.
we've drowned this out for about 2 hours now, so...
I don't know how we got from Sprint to that.
I'm
so
not sure.
It just happened.
But so the major announcement that we had tonight is we are going to be giving away some copies of the Master Chief Collection. It's come to the point where we're a little more comfortable now giving them away than we were when the Master Chief Collection originally came out with all the bugs and all the mishaps regarding the achievements, matchmaking, custom games, all that stuff. So in order for you to enter, you have to do one of a few things. We're kind of doing this as a sweepstakes kind of thing. So in order to gain entries, what you have to do is follow us on all our respective social media accounts. So that includes Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitch. Each one of those will get you one entry into the giveaway sweepstakes. And then there's another entry where you need to go on our forums. You can go there to podtacular.com/forums and post an introductory thread and make 3 other good quality posts on the website. So it could be something where you're contributing to post that we have about the content patch or something about Nightfall, something like that. But have to have at least three good quality posts, and then you need to, if your handle is different than your forum registration name, you're doing the forum stuff, then you need to kind of let us know. So send me a PM, and we'll of course have a post up on the forums where you can, and they'll be sticky, where you can go and see, like, here are the official rules, and you can go up there and basically tie your handles, whatever you're following, so on Twitter or what your name is on Facebook. And you can, if you're like a private, if you have like a private Twitter or a private Facebook, then you can just DM us that info as well, and we'll register you into the sweepstakes that way. But that's kind of how we're going to give away this stuff. We have, I believe, three copies to give away in this regards. So tell your friends, if they're looking for the Master Chief Collection, that they have some opportunities here to win one. And then, of course, on next week's show, we'll announce them. Also, another way you can earn an entry is to participate in our game nights next week. Godzilla, what are the games going to be for next week?
Well, Wacky Wednesday is still going to be on Halo 4. Tactical Tuesday, we'll probably do Halo 3.
So there you go. Come play Halo 3 on Tuesday with us and Halo 4 on Wednesday with us, and that will also get you a sweepstakes entry as well. So those are your opportunities. We hope that you will share this with your friends, and of course we'll have an official post going up on this tomorrow, and we'll be making the announcements of the winners on next show, which will be our last show before the break. I think that's all from an administrative standpoint that we have right now. Once we get to the week after Christmas, I think the game plan is, if we can, we're going to make Tactical Tuesdays be on the Halo 5 Guardians multiplayer beta, and Wacky Wednesdays will finally transition over to the Master Chief Collection.
So if any of you have a map or mini game or race map that you like to play, send me a message either over Twitter or on Xbox Live, and I will get in touch with you and we'll take a look at the map. You can get me at Godzilla T on Xbox Live or at Godzilla Todd on Twitter, and feel free to contact us as well.
So that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thank you everyone for tuning into the live stream, for those that did, for those that didn't and are listening to us via iTunes or Zune Marketplace or whatever other podcast feeder that you subscribe to. You can check out our live recording. We do it on Thursday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, typically. Next week, we're actually going to be recording at 10 p.m. Eastern Time to accommodate some special guests that we will have on the show next week. Yes. We also stream our game nights on Tuesdays and Wednesdays as well, and those happen at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. So if you want to come drop by on the stream, if you can't play with us, then that's one way you can come and watch some fun Halo gameplay. And if not, you can just come and join in the festivities. And Godzilla Todd is the one that is running all those game nights for you. So make sure you send him a message whenever you want to join up with us, and we'd be happy to get you in.
Definitely.
Make sure you check out our social networks. We are on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Obviously, we have Twitch for the live stream. We're on Instagram, and we also have a YouTube, which we will hopefully utilize a lot more when the Halo 5 beta comes around and some other stuff regarding the Master Chief Collection. But until then, it's a little stagnant right now. But content, we always have plans for content. It's just a matter of finding time to do it. And it would be nice to have people to actually do it as well. But anyways, if you have any last minute shopping, then for Christmas or any other holiday that you celebrate around this time, then we have an Amazon affiliate link that we would very much appreciate that you use. You can use this on any purchase that you make on Amazon, and it has a little bit of contributing factor that goes straight back to us. You can do it as easy as filling up your cart and then using the link podtackler.com/Amazon to complete your order. And that will give us a tiny bit of credit that comes back to us and supports the website, supports the show. Or you can donate to us directly, and you can do that via the Donate PayPal button on our homepage at podtackler.com. Make sure you check out our forums and join in the conversations over there. We have plenty of threads talking about Nightfall, talking about all the issues with Halo, the Master Chief Collection, and all the content updates thereof, and some other cool little threads there as well. After the break, we'll probably get back into the whole thread highlight stuff that we were doing a little while back in the show. But until then, make sure you just go on over, check out the forums, come say hi. We'd love to talk to you there. And also check out some of the podcasts over on the podcast network. That is thepodcast.com. Includes podcasts like Guardian Radio, Critzcast, Reachcast, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. All great gaming podcasts that you guys will definitely enjoy. Even if you don't play the games, they're still good entertainment to listen to. But if you are looking for other games other than Halo to possibly play, then those are some good podcasts to listen to and some good games to look into as well. So make sure you guys go check them out. They are awesome. And the podcast network is that much awesome as well. That's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thank you for tuning in. This has been episode 455 of Podtackler. And we will see you guys next time. Keep on fragging elements that only targets human DNA.